everyone. Nice to see you both. Have with me, as always,
Sean
and James. Took a long pause there for both of us.
I forgot what my name was.
Yeah.
One of those days.
Long nights.
Looking forward to this episode already.
Absolutely.
Start as you mean to go on.
So how have we been, James?
Very good. Got back from another work trip the other day. Been to Hong Kong this time for 2 weeks, which was lovely. Got invited to go to a couple of lodge meetings out there in the district. And fortunately, work took over, so I didn't get to go.
But did you say fortunately or unfortunately?
Unfortunately. Okay. I did want to go, but I'll be back again soon. So hopefully I can take up the very kind offer that Daniel, you know who you are, gave me to go and visit one of his lodges. Other than that, been busy with masonry. Had a Royal Arch meeting a few days ago, which I am Joshua of my chapter. Did the historical lecture, which is always a nice piece to do. Very much enjoyed doing that. First time I delivered it, which was great.
Lovely.
Word perfect.
Of course.
Obviously.
That sounds really, really pompous and big-headed, doesn't it? But no, it went really well. I was actually finalising my learning of it on my flight back, because I got back on Friday morning and the meeting was at 11 o'clock on Saturday. Mm. So I was using the flight time to
I don't know what it is. I love revising ritual on flights. I think it's the quiet and that everyone's like, no one's going to disturb you. Your phone's not going off.
When you've got the champagne on the lay flat bed, obviously it really helps, doesn't it? So,
yeah, I couldn't learn ritual on a flight because I'm paralysed with anxiety.
You don't like flying?
Really?
No, I don't have a fear of flying.
Ritual or flying?
Sorry, well, yeah. I don't have a fear of flying. I have a fear of dying. But and if I'm honest with you guys, there are not many places in the world that I want to go that much that I want to be fired at it at 400 miles an hour.
At least. Right?
In a tin can. And, you know, I mean, look, I'm getting better at it. I flew in 2003 to visit family in the US.
That's a long time ago. Better?
Yeah.
Give us an example from 20 years ago.
In 2023, I flew to Cyprus. That was the first time I'd flown in like ages.
Oh, wow.
20 years. And there was just some residual anxiety, and I'm still dealing with that.
So, obviously...
I'm going on a stag do in June. Sorry, just to say, I'm going on a stag do in June, and all my friends are going to be taking the mickey out of me on the flight.
I mean, you laugh, but in fairness, that's a really big thing.
Thank you. Yeah, and I have a little thing that I do now. I have noise-cancelling headphones, mm-hmm. and I have a game on my phone that I play, and that helps to block out the intense fear that my body experiences.
So if you are in an overseas district and would like us to come and visit your district to
don't
record
invite
it,
Sean.
You may only get two of us for that episode.
I'm
what,
happy to travel to the
what happens when you
Isle
need to
flight.
Come to Gibraltar?
Yeah, but again, I'm sort of. Although I've heard Gibraltar actually is pretty hairy to fly into.
Best
not comment.
It's a steep approach into Gibraltar.
So it's got its own microclimate, and so you've got the rock
great.
And
that
Levanter
great,
and winds, and you've got the runways surrounded by ocean and
quite windy,
and a road that well now it doesn't, but it used to cross the runway. And they used to close the roads.
That seems like an odd place to put a road.
Hang on, what have they done now? Is there a tunnel or something?
There's a tunnel.
Oh,
they've
finally done it.
Yeah, they finally shut the road and opened a tunnel.
Yeah. This is still a Masonic podcast, by the
well,
way.
Well, no, yeah, but I'm you couldn't have asked for a better opportunity to actually, you know, was it 14 hours from Hong Kong?
14 hours, yeah.
So 14 hours literally just going through. I mean, it's literally
you should have been well perfect.
Yeah, you've got no excuse.
I slept for 7 hours and then I still had 7 more hours to continue
that would kill
learning.
Me. I just couldn't deal with that.
I had a full night's sleep and then like a whole working day left to practice my ritual.
And work, of course.
Yeah, of course.
That is one thing I like about travelling, though, is that no one bothers you kind of thing, like, on the most part, that you can... It's almost accepted that like, you've got your own space, you've got your own time.
Apart from the inner demons, in my case. tapping on the shoulder.
What have you been up to, Mr. Butler?
I've not been too well, actually. Oh. As you may hear, I'm a bit
chesty.
I've been going through packs of Fisherman's Friends, like No Tomorrow. Mm. Cherry flavour, or blackcurrant. Not a fan of the originals.
Other brands are available.
Jakeman's. Mm-hmm. And then, James, you and I, of course, were kindly invited by brother Jonathan Hibbins. Well, and yourself, Stephen, but you can come. Invited by Jonathan Hibbins to the annual Richard Sandbach lecture in the province of Northamptonshire and Huntingdonshire. And we were there in Peterborough last night, weren't we?
We were. And I have to say, the Hearts of Oak lecture that was given, talking about some of the amazing people that have been awarded the Victoria Cross, it was a super engaging lecture. But secondly, you just hear these stories and you think, these people are amazing. Yeah. Some of the acts of bravery that they demonstrated, but they always say the same thing, right? It's just, I didn't do anything special. I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
And I think we're going to get the lectures done by a chap called Mark Smith, mm-hmm. who is an assistant provincial grandmaster in Essex, but he's also the sort of military medals expert on the Antiques Roadshow.
Yep.
He's a really interesting guy. And we're gonna get him on the podcast. We spoke to him last night, or he's sort of keen to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the stories, I mean, amazing. I mean, you couldn't, and because he said, you know, a lot of people in the room would say, I couldn't do that. You know, and the whole point of the lecture is to sort of say, well, you know, these people aren't and don't see themselves as superheroes. So for those of you that aren't aware, the Victoria Cross is the main, you know, that's the highest honour of military, you know, reward that can be given. So it's only given for the top, 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 top.
There's only nine and there are nine recipients surviving people that are currently alive, yeah.
And it's a huge deal. But we're gonna get him on, so...
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for that. But yeah, otherwise, all good.
And then what about Worshipful Brother Whatley in the corner?
Been very busy, as I mentioned, in particular with the upcoming scheme conference for the university scheme. I believe on our New Year's resolutions episode, I mentioned
mm-hmm.
One of the things we talked about, sort of finding time to enjoy things that we enjoy in Freemasonry and do things that we you know, really love doing and believe in. And the project really that I've been spending a lot of time on is the University Society Support Network, which is to be launched at the University Scheme Conference. And yeah, really excited about it. It's taken a lot of months, in fact, a couple of years to plan and get all the resources ready and be available to support the university scheme and its students.
And we are actually going to be there to support you, aren't we? Because we're going to be recording an episode of the podcast from...
On location, live.
On location, live. What could possibly go wrong? From the event.
Yeah, indeed.
We're not going to heckle you, don't worry.
Thank you.
Well, I might.
You might. Marta definitely will.
She will, yeah.
But not us.
Well,
No, well done, mate. I mean, I've seen it. It's
a huge
piece of work
as well, yeah, that you did.
Thank you.
You must be very pleased.
I'll be pleased when it's in action and helping people, to be honest, because I've already seen a few glimpses of it, that some people have sort of done test runs with a couple of lodges and societies and just different resources and things, and it, the feedback that I've had is really encouraging. So
brilliant.
So looking forward to seeing it in full swing, really.
So, James, what are we going to be talking about in today's episode?
So today we are going to carry on with the theme that we started in season one, which was Masonic Explainer. So if you remember back to season one, we went through a couple of Masonic words.
I've been to sleep since then.
Yeah. Well, you are a student, so, you know, sleep is what you do, right? We're going to go through some more. So we've got a sort of spin the wheel fishbowl of various Masonic terminology, and we're going to completely at random pick a word out and try to explain what it is. So really useful for non-Masons listening or new Masons listening, or maybe you're an experienced Mason and actually you don't really understand a particular word, because there is a lot of traditional language that we use in Freemasonry.
Absolutely.
And words that you probably don't hear out in the outside world very much. So we're going to do our very best between the three of us to attempt to give a very clear explanation of what these words are.
Yes, and I to be honest with you, that's sort of timeless tradition element of it is what appeals to me, because some of the language that we used, it is old. It's been there for 300 years plus, you know, so we sort of should celebrate that history. But appreciate that, obviously, for those of you that aren't yet Freemasons, it may be a little confusing. So hopefully this episode, as with season one, helps you somewhat in understanding the words that we say. Shall we go on with it?
Let's do it.
Let's go.
Our first explainer word is PGM. What is a PGM?
Well, technically, PGM is the incorrect abbreviation of Provincial Grandmaster, which I assume was the was what we were aiming for.
It does mean provincial grandmaster, yeah.
PGM technically means past grandmaster. The abbreviation for provincial grandmaster is PROV, P-R-O-V-G-M. And a provincial grandmaster is essentially the head of Freemasonry in their particular province or sort of region. When we say province, we mean a region or an area. So, for example, East Lancashire, West Lancashire, North Wales, etc. Warwickshire.
A fine course, province. James. A fine province.
And their responsibility is essentially to lead
that
particular area, that particular group of lodges within that region.
And as an addendum to that, there is also a DGM.
Indeed,
yes. Is there not, Mr. Whatley?
Or is it not DIST?
DIST GM, if we're going to be correct.
Then again, there's no, you know, past doesn't begin with a D, so you're pretty safe with DGM.
Yeah.
Deputy Grandmaster.
Oh, good point.
Yeah, no, I think that's Dep GM.
That's Dep GM, isn't it?
Who knows?
We certainly can.
We'll clarify.
So district or DIST or DGM. Yeah, I actually get quite a lot of questions from even experienced Masons who haven't come across districts very much or really understanding what it is or what makes them different necessarily. But realistically, it's provinces overseas. It means that they're an area, a group.
Typically smaller than a province,
simply because, well, it's overseas. And for example, Gibraltar, no way could compete in terms of number of lodges to Warwickshire. But in every other way, it works practically very similarly. Just the size means, for example, some fewer offices at district level. And I think often one of the misconceptions is that it's got a lot of hard work that goes into it on a almost micromanaged level, if that makes sense. Because it's smaller, you have more of an interaction with individual lodges. You get asked more questions directly. You've got smaller teams doing things. So it's sort of the same work scaled down, if that makes sense. Because if you look at a province where the provincial grand secretary has a deputy and assistant and maybe someone employed often by the province, we don't have that, for example, in Gibraltar. It's just the district grand secretary and his deputy, and that's it.
Who's the district grand secretary in Gibraltar?
I thought that might come up. Good old dad.
So there are, for those listening that aren't Masons or maybe don't know, so I think the United Grand Lodge of England has, I think it's 48 provinces.
Including Metropolitan,
which we'll get onto in just a second. And then there's a number of districts, and the overseas districts, so as you said, Stephen, Gibraltar, Hong Kong, and these are other countries, essentially, or parts of other countries that their Freemasonry is administered by the United Grand Lodge of England, just like they were, I don't want to say the mainland, but you know what I mean, like they were in England or Wales. But there is, we've talked about provinces, we've talked about districts, there is a third category, Sean.
Yes, so you've got 47 provinces.
Yes.
And the 48, number 48, is Metropolitan Grand Lodge of London, which is different. I mean, it just is. And you know, we'll be speaking to, would have spoken to, you would have heard, I'm sure, the episode where we spoke to Sir Michael Snyder and Warren Duke and others about London and how it is unique, how it's different. But London's huge, Masonically, absolutely massive.
And so their abbreviation is instead Met GM to specify that difference. Yeah.
But I mean, essentially, to boil it down, they do the same job in their region. They are the leaders of Freemasonry in that part of the country or in that district overseas.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think we've covered that quite well, gents.
I think so. We're Stephen, actually not bad at this, are we?
Oh, anyway, I think we were Freemasons.
Right, let's move
apart
on.
Apart from, you know, all the bits that we don't know.
You're up, Stephen.
Spin that wheel.
I should say spin the wheel. He's actually got his hand in a fishbowl picking out a piece of paper.
Don't kill the mystique.
Took me a second to read that. Who wrote these?
Probably Shay.
VSL.
Oh, that's a good one.
So, James, do you wanna start with that?
Throw James the ball on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So, VSL stands for Volume of Sacred Law. And what is that? So, Freemasonry is a non-political, non-religious organisation. But one of the requirements to be a Freemason is you have to believe in a supreme being. So that is something above yourself. It could be a god of a particular religion, or it could be your interpretation of what you believe that higher power is. It's very much open to the individual. And the VSL is a generic, all-encompassing term that we use to describe the holy books of different faiths. So in every lodge meeting, we have a or maybe multiple holy books in the lodge room. So it could be the Bible, it could be the Quran, it could be the Torah. And in many cases, actually, there might be multiple open if there are members of different faiths meeting together in that room.
And especially, I think, if you've got candidates who are conducting ceremonies, yeah. So if it's a multiple ceremony and you've got different candidates of different faiths, I've seen that a lot in university lodges, of course.
And the reason that we do that, really, I think, is that, you know, we say we have to believe in a supreme being to be a Freemason. It's important to think that, you know, the promises that you make and the commitments to how you conduct yourself, you're accountable to a higher power at some point later down the road. And so we have the VSL, whichever book that may be, or books, open in the meetings as a reminder to ourselves about that accountability through whatever faith we choose to follow.
I don't think I can add anything to that. I thought that was spot on.
If I'm being really pedantic, I think it's volume of the sacred law.
All right, come on.
God, fell at the first hurdle, actually, James.
That's exactly right. And I think that's actually a common misconception within Freemasonry, outside of Freemasonry, really, of Freemasonry.
Yeah.
Sort of an external misconception of what exactly how religion fits into Freemasonry fact that it is a religious and that it's accepting and inclusive of all beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think,
excellent.
I think it's one of the great things about Freemasonry, actually, is that I think sometimes religion can cause conflicts in parts of the world.
pretty sure that's a fact.
But actually, in Freemasonry, you can be in a lodge meeting and have people from every possible religion in
the world.
You know, being in that meeting and spending time together in perfect harmony. And I think it's one of the few organisations that really has an ability to bring those groups of people together.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right.
And same with politics, that it's not discussed and it's not, at lodge meetings, it can divide people. Mm. And that's not the point of Freemasonry.
Mm-hmm.
No.
And the way I see it, at least, is that no matter what your political or religious belief, if you're a Freemason, you have the same base values as I do.
Absolutely.
Right. And that's what ultimately you respect as a Freemason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I saw a really good example of it at one lodge meeting where the senior warden and junior warden were both former leaders of their individual parties in the area, and they actually said in their at the festive board in their toasts that made this point that despite the fact that we have very differing political views and we've had several debates over the years, at the end of the day, we're here because we value the same things, same fundamentals.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Great.
Sean, you're up.
Spin the wheel, fishbowl.
Spin that wheel.
Bonus prize.
Our survey says light blue.
Oh, nice. Yeah, Stephen.
I'm the only light blue here.
You are.
I'm the... God. We've all been light blues, guys. All
we
right?
have.
But you know what? Irrespective of Masonic rank...
You've had to patronise me.
No, irrespective of Masonic rank, we elevate people to lofty positions like Director of Membership and
Community.
That's the 2022 and beyond strategy coming to life right there.
Well, I think a really initial thing to say is the Grand Master is an entered apprentice, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. We are all, as Masons, we come in as entered apprentices.
There is still white on his apron.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah. And so light blue is a term, for those who may not know, I'm sure most Freemasons will, but light blue is a term for those Master Masons who have not progressed to district or provincial or metropolitan grand rank. Mm-hmm. And so your apron goes from white as an entered apprentice to white with two rosettes as a fellowcraft, to light blue with some white and three rosettes as a Master Mason. And then the next step from that will be, in most cases, levels on that light blue apron. But that's still light blue. And then when you get to provincial, metropolitan, district, grand rank, which we've obviously just discussed, then it changes to dark blue. And then above that, you've got grand rank as well, which is still dark blue. It doesn't
Very
change colour.
Blue.
But that's a bit
Big dark
deeper,
blue.
deeper of a dark blue. That's the term for light blue. But I think it's, in most cases, seen as almost a term of endearment among like within provinces, mm-hmm. for example, with light blues clubs.
Yeah.
If you've got a fellow light blue, it's often respected that, you know, it, that doesn't mean that you're any lesser than a dark blue. Yeah. And that's, you know, obviously a really important point that we're all equal. And that's why really I started with, you know, even the grandmaster, the program master is an entered apprentice. Yeah. We've all been there. We all started from the same place. And in terms of membership, we're all equal, whether you've been here for 60 years or a day.
I think you hit the nail on the head there when you said that, you know, we're all entered apprentices. I think, you know, once you've been to the third degree to become a Master Mason, it doesn't matter how much you progress in terms of rank in Freemasonry beyond that, whether you become a provincial officer or, the you know, technically the Grand Master, in terms of the degrees you've been through, the steps on the ladder of Freemasonry's progression, we're all Master Masons once we get to the third degree.
Yeah.
There is no higher degree than being a Master Mason. Everything else is just...
Within craft Freemasonry.
Within the craft. Yeah. Everything else is just levels of responsibility that you are given within the craft. But your the highest degree is the Master Mason degree, the third degree.
Yeah, I as the only light blue here, I approve this message.
I'm Sean Butler.
Well, I approve this message. And obviously you say within the craft, but there's also the chapter and other companion orders. But like you say, Master Mason is the basis of, and craft is the basis of your Freemasonry. Mm-hmm. And the rest is additional, as was mentioned in the quarterly communication meeting addressed by the Program Master of the Grand Lodge of Marked Master Masons.
And even the Royal Arch, you know, we think about this message of being one organisation. I've said this before, but if you look in the front of the Book of Constitutions, it talks about the Royal Arch. And it says that Masonry consists of three degrees, Entered Apprentice, Fellow Craft and Master Mason, including the Royal Arch.
Yes.
The Royal Arch is part of the third degree to a certain extent, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So even when you become a companion, and hopefully you all will, in the Royal Arch, it's part of the third degree. It's not an additional degree that you're taking.
The way it was always described to me was you do 3 degrees,
mm-hmm.
and then there's this other one that you do after that, which is done in a different type of room, but it's connected to the three that you've done before.
Yeah.
Well, it used to be part of the third degree before it was separated.
And we are going to do a big episode and cover the Royal Arch and talk to
fine order
the movers and shakers
movers and shakers
within the Royal Arch and
Archcast.
oh nice. Absolutely.
Is that going to be the title now?
It's got to be.
It's got
to
be.
Copyright it.
We're going to have to change the artwork to red for that episode. Or something.
Right. Next one then.
Right. Am I up now?
You're up.
Indeed.
Okay.
You are.
Let's go. Okay. So, Ashlar.
Ooh.
Okay.
Go on, James.
I'll take this one. Okay. So, Freemasonry is full of symbolism. I think it's quite well known for being full of symbolism. And in every lodge room, there are two pieces of stone, literal stone, and they're called ashlars. And one sits on the table of the junior warden, and one sits on the table of the senior warden. And they are symbolically there to represent you as the Mason. And on the junior warden's table, we have what's called the rough ashlar, which is literally a rough piece of stone taken straight from the quarry as it was cut out of the stone face. And on the senior warden's table, we have a perfectly square, smooth block of stone. So on the junior warden's table, the rough stone represents the new Mason coming into Freemasonry, rough and ready to be formed by the teachings and the lessons of Freemasonry about moral conduct and how to behave in life. And the smooth ashlar on the senior warden's table represents what we aspire towards. Many of us will never get there, but it's the aspiration of being perfectly formed, well-rounded, having learnt the lessons that Freemasonry provides about how to be a good individual.
Well, I think none of us ever will get there. But like you say, that's the importance of it. It's the aspiration to be, and that I think embodies Freemasonry, the aspiration to be the best you can be as an individual.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's just one of the thousands of things that you can look at in Freemasonry from a symbolism point of view, which has a very important moral lesson when you understand what it's there for and what it means.
Well, and actually you can lean on some of those when we look at some of the, you know, the sort of things that are well known about Freemasonry, like the apron. you know, the handshake or the grip or whatever you want to call it. But there are, you know, again, all of that comes from those roots with medieval stonemasonry and, you know.
It's all symbolic.
It's all symbolic. You know, aprons, you know, you're working with stone all day. You don't want to damage your clothes, so you wear an apron to stop the stone chipping.
Or yourselves, yeah.
Yeah, getting onto you. You wear gloves because you don't want to damage your hands. You know, these were the days before LinkedIn and CVs. You know, you're not rocking up with a CV and saying, oh, you know, turning up to your next building project, oh, yeah, I've got this level of experience. In those days, the way you did that was through a handshake or a grip and a word. That was how you communicated your level of expertise as you arrived at those different building projects.
Well, many of them were illiterate as well, so they couldn't have even read a CV if such a thing existed.
Exactly.
Well, and I think that that's a nice, actually, example of a cool explanation as to why we often recite ritual from memory, not reading it from a book. It's a question that I get asked every now and then, why don't we just read it? I mean, first of all, has such a greater impact, I think, on the candidate when it's
not read, but
said with feeling, because it's coming from you, not from a book. And also because of, traditionally, they wouldn't have been able to have, a lot of people, a lot of lodge members wouldn't have been able to have read it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well done, James.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Whatley?
I'm up.
You're up.
Spin the wheel.
Tyler. Ooh,
good
That's
one.
That's a nice one.
Who wants that?
Good one.
Well, I think anyone who has been initiated, any Freemason, will remember a few people. They'll always remember their initiation, but they'll remember particularly a few people from their initiation.
Yes.
I think they always remember the master.
Yes.
I think they always remember the junior deacon.
Yes.
And they always remember the Tyler.
Yeah.
Yes.
I agree on all fronts.
And I think, you know, in some scenarios they'll remember other people as well, but everyone will remember those three people. And I think the Tyler is such an important and sometimes underrated job because they are your first experience, really, in lodge Freemasonry. You know, actually within, you know, your that process of you joining, it's your first step, the first person you encounter in your ceremony. And that, and you, the Tyler is the person who historically stood outside the door of the lodge and stopped anyone from entering.
Yeah.
And symbolically still does the same.
Yeah.
And whilst that's obviously such an important role, I think certainly in modern Freemasonry, the most important role for them is that they prepare the candidates for the ceremonies. And so, I often see, you know, different lodges have different ways of doing it. Some lodges hire Tylers who are Masons and they offer them their meal, or some people make half a career out of it in terms of you know, go around different lodges and that's how they spend many of their evenings.
Yeah.
But also for some lodges, it's an office on the ladder. And different lodges have different rituals, shall we say, of how to do that and traditions. But I think it can't be understated how, or it can't be overstated, I should say, how important your Tyler is to the candidates for your ceremonies. And I certainly remember for mine that it was someone that I'd known since I was young. And he was friendly and reassuring and encouraging, and that made all the difference. And I will never forget that, and I'm sure that most Freemasons will have a similar thing to say.
Absolutely agree with that. I remember when I was initiated into Greenwich Meridian Lodge, number 6791, sadly no longer meets, but I remember I was taken to the bar, which used to be across the road from Freemasons Hall, called Wolf's. I was sat at the bar and everyone else disappeared to go into the meeting.
Age.
I know, right? disappeared to go into the meeting. And they said, you wait here and we'll see you soon. And then I was taken by the lodge mentor, I think it was, up to the lodge room, handed over to the Tyler, who placed me in this small room adjoining to the ante room. And there I was left until the time came where I needed to be prepared. But I will always remember that guy. And I'll, it's exactly the same as your experience, Stephen. What a friendly, nice, calming influence he had. When I was really nervous, naturally, you know.
It is a nerve-wracking experience.
Oh, yeah.
You know, new experience, isn't it?
I mean, a lot of people think that because my parents are Freemasons, that I wouldn't have had that same experience, that I wasn't nervous.
They told
that
you
I would,
nothing.
Yeah, well, precisely. I think actually I was told possibly less than we tell most kids. They were so like, we don't want to influence you in any way, that I knew quite literally nothing. And so when I was so nervous coming in, and especially because I knew I had my father, my grandfather was going to be in there. So many people I'd known from my childhood. So it was quite a, as you say, a nerve-wracking experience. And that calming influence, that's a really important point.
And I remember him saying to me, just before I was about to go in, just remember, everybody in that room has been through exactly the same thing you're about to go through. And for me, that just... like any nerves or anything I had just evaporated at that point, because I thought, I don't need to be embarrassed, I don't need to feel awkward or anything.
It's a rather nice segue with everyone's an entered apprentice.
Absolutely.
So just to reiterate, I mean, when I was initiated, the Tyler was kind, reassuring, said the same thing to me, Sean. Everybody's been through the same thing that you're going through, and it does just calm the nerves. So yes, whilst they are the person that technically guards the door as their primary job, I think what you said, Stephen, where you started with that, actually the more important job today
in modern Freemasonry,
Freemasonry is looking after the candidates before they go in, especially the new initiates.
Indeed.
Right, Sean, you're up. Let's go. One more.
Twill wicked.
Make it good.
Been folded 1,000 times.
I know, literally.
Who did these?
The chair.
The chair.
There are many chairs. This particular piece of paper refers to... the chair.
What is the chair, Sean?
The chair. Well, again, ironic, because I'm the only person who hasn't been in it.
But you the go. Chair. But you'll be in the chair.
I will be in
soon.
The chair next year, subject to election, of course, the
of
approval
course.
Of the Brethren of Letchworth Lodge, number 3505. The chair in this this context obviously refers to the chair of the Worshipful Master, or the sort of leader of the lodge for that year. And the chair is placed in the east, in the lodge room, and that's where the Worshipful Master conducts the business of the meeting
presides.
And of the lodge, and presides over the business of the lodge. And, the chair is where he sits.
A literal chair.
It's a literal chair. Yeah. I mean, there's no other way to put it.
And I think we use the term colloquially as well, right? When you say, have you been through the chair, what we're asking really is, are you a worshipful brother? Have you served as master of a lodge?
And it can't be understated, really, the importance of that chair. I mean, it's called the chair because it has a very important role within the governance of the lodge. I mean, you are the top man or woman in that lodge. So, you know, it's... you're right, though. We do use it colloquially, but it represents the authority of that lodge in a way, doesn't it?
It does.
It's a big deal. And as I say, February next year, 2025.
You'll be in.
Apparently so. Subject.
Subject to election.
To election of the Brethren of Letchworth Lodge number 3505.
And of course, all three of us, well, you certainly will be there.
So
subject to election. But I think we'll have to go as well.
Indeed, yeah.
Don't make me say it again.
Go on, say it one more time.
I'll just...
Say what?
Subject.
Subject to election of the Brethren of Letchworth Lodge number 3505.
Yes, despite the fact neither of you came to my installation, I will make sure that I come to yours.
Okay, so first of all, as we established the intro, he won't get on a plane. And I'm pretty sure I was abroad somewhere else at the time.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm not flying over the M25 to land in Gibraltar, by the sounds of it.
Well, you'll have to come up when I go through, subject to election, go through the chair of my university lodge, because that doesn't require a flight.
Speaking of... the chair, actually.
Yes.
You neglected to say that you have been proclaimed as master of your mother lodge for a second year.
Ah,
right?
Yes, that. Yeah.
What? He's a second year in
How
a row.
How did this pass us by?
He's just let it slip under the radar, hasn't he?
Yeah, indeed. To be honest, seems as the topic has arisen. It's been honestly my most favourite job in Freemasonry so far, being in the chair of my mother lodge, because of the meaning behind it, as you say, and how the importance of it. And I think when you really give your all to it, there aren't many jobs in Freemasonry that are as rewarding.
Yeah.
As much as it is hard work, it's certainly a rewarding job. And if you haven't, or if you haven't heard of the term Worshipful Master, if you're not a Freemason, you haven't heard our first explainer episode. You can head back to season one and check it out there. And with that, I think, brethren, we have finished our second explainer episode.
We certainly have. And if there's any words out there Masonically that you would like us to explain in a future episode, please email us, podcasts@ugle.org.uk. You can find us on X or Twitter at @ugle_Grand Lodge. We're on Instagram and Facebook, United Grand Lodge of England. Do get in touch with us on there. And with that, we will see you very soon. Goodbye.
Craftcast, the Freemasons podcast. The podcast is hosted by Sean Butler, Stephen Watley, and James Dalton. The producer is Marta Zandri. And the podcast is edited by Trisonic.